Welcome to the next episode of the Fit and Healthy Sioux Falls podcast. I've got a great friend here, Angela Kennecke, that is joining us today. And so we are going to dive in and really open up your eyes to a lot of information today. So let's dive into today's episode. Angela, welcome to the show, my dear.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it is. Actually, it's kind of an honor to have you on here.
Oh.
I have learned more and more about you and about Emily's Hope as you've been a member at the gym now. And I'm just really interested to really uncover that world that you live in. And I'd like to kind of start off with maybe having you just share what Emily's Hope is and maybe how it came to be, if you would.
Sure. Emily's Hope is a 501c3. We are a charity registered in South Dakota, but we do actually do work nationwide.
Okay.
So I started Emily's Hope after my daughter, Emily, died from fentanyl poisoning in May of 2018. I would never wish losing a child on anybody. It is absolutely the worst thing I think that can happen to a parent.
Yeah.
But I knew a few months after her loss that I really had to do something to share her story, to try to help other people, to try to make sure other people didn't go through this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sadly, overdose/fentanyl poisoning deaths have only risen since she died. In the year that she died, the CDC recorded 72,000 of them.
Oh, wow.
And in the last 12-month reporting period, there were 112,000.
Oh,
so the
wow.
numbers continue to go up and up. Younger people are dying. Kids are dying after they buy a pill off of Snapchat. And I just think that the work for us at Emily's Hope is really endless. I mean, we have a lot of work to do. We are helping people, but it is discouraging to see the numbers going up.
Yeah. And as we were talking a little bit before we started recording, I feel very naive in this whole realm of the work that you do. I had mentioned to you, I have a cousin who sadly also has passed away from a fentanyl poisoning overdose. And my cousin that is still living, her husband, he got to share with me a little bit about it, but even then I didn't fully understand and still haven't understood, and as we've been talking now, how big, and like you said, 130 plus thousand cases of this in a year. So it's definitely needed work. And I've got three kids of my own. I couldn't imagine losing a child.
Right.
And one thing I mentioned to you is just like how awesome I do think it is, though, is that you took this tragedy and have been able to put it into your life's work to help others with this. Because I feel that what you're doing is when someone does go through this, having people that out there that are support, that can support them, that have walked it, is needed.
People do feel really alone, and it's very much a stigmatized death. And I'm so sorry for the loss of your cousin.
Yeah.
It's horrible. And she was a mom, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
I mean, it's just, and almost everybody has been touched by this epidemic in one way or the other, whether it's a cousin or an immediate family member or a friend or a coworker, almost everybody's been touched by it because it has a lot to do with addiction. It's not just about addiction. I mean, we know that we have teenagers out there experimenting, buying a pill off of Snapchat.
Yeah.
They aren't necessarily suffering from substance use disorder.
Yeah.
But sadly, 49 million Americans suffer from substance use disorder.
Yeah.
And when people are using drugs today, the entire black market drugs, all of the drugs in the black market out there are tainted, and most of them have fentanyl or other really dangerous drugs in them, such as xylazine. So it's just such a dangerous time to have a substance use disorder.
Yeah. I was curious and very interested to find out because I don't know a lot about fentanyl or how that works. And you had kind of cued me in a little bit on fentanyl and how much fentanyl it takes to kill a human. And that statistic that you like share with me was just mind blowing. So if you could share with us, like what is that, the statistic? And then also too, how much fentanyl can be in some of these drugs?
Right. So fentanyl is a synthetic opioid. So it's made in a lab, and the raw ingredients are coming into Mexico from China, sometimes India. And then the Mexican drug cartels are putting it into drugs every drug that they make, sometimes it's just they might try to sell it as heroin, but it's pure fentanyl now.
Okay.
And the reason they're doing that is because it's so cheap. So if you think about heroin, you had to grow a crop of poppies and harvest it. You had to be a farmer. Fentanyl is synthetic. It's made in a lab. It's cheap. It's easy. Sometimes they're putting it together in the middle of the jungle, and then they're shipping it. It's a huge multi-billion dollar business.
Sure.
And they're shipping it into this country oftentimes through the post office, through UPS, through different vehicles. Sometimes it's coming in through tunnels under the border, sometimes through legal checkpoints, sometimes through ships and planes, getting here a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Once it's here, it's typically dealt by Americans to other Americans. Okay. Many times those people selling it have a substance use disorder problem themselves.
Yeah.
It's just such a vicious cycle and such a horrible thing that's happening. And it feels sort of insurmountable.
Yeah.
Right? It feels like, and I mentioned to you before we started recording, it takes about what's equivalent of 2 grains of salt of fentanyl wow. to kill you. And I tell that to high school students all over the nation.
Yeah.
And just today we had a story on Emily's Hope. We follow the news about this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we had a story today about how opioid analogs 25 times stronger than fentanyl are being found in Canada right now. So, wow. And they've also been found in the United States and on other drugs like horse tranquilizers, big animal tranquilizers, yeah. xylazine. So it's just a really scary time to use anything. But of yeah. course, people with substance use disorder really can't help it because their brain has been hijacked
yeah.
by the need for these substances. And that's why it's so important that we do many things. First mm-hmm. of all, that we educate people.
Yeah.
And second of all, that we get people help and that help is accessible and affordable.
Yeah.
So both of those things combined are what really is going to combat this horrible epidemic.
I was in Miami here just last week talking with other FitBody owners. And one of our other owners, I was sitting talking with him and he had someone that he knows pass away from a drug overdose. And the person that he knows was clean and did not use drugs or was able to stay away from drugs for a period of time.
Sure.
And then had a relapse. And what they found out was that he ended up going back to drugs. And I don't know this to be true, but maybe you know more than I do. When they end up going back to using drugs again, they go back and they try to use at the same level
right.
that they were using.
That's correct.
And so this is what had happened with this guy that he knew. And he went back and overdose as well and passed
right.
away.
Because people build up a tolerance over time, just yeah. like you would. I mean, a lot of people drink alcohol and they build up yes. a tolerance, right? So they build up a tolerance to these drugs. And then if they have been in recovery for a while and not using them, they go back to using the same amount, they can overdose and die.
Yeah.
Oftentimes fentanyl is mixed in with these drugs. So then that is considered fentanyl poisoning.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things. The CDC clumps them all together and calls them overdose.
Okay.
But about 80% of those are from fentanyl.
Can a person build up a tolerance to fentanyl?
Oh, yeah, sure, they can. And people become addicted to fentanyl. And one of the reasons why the cartels put fentanyl in everything is because it's so highly addictive.
Sure.
And so if you have someone that thinks they're using one thing, but it's really fentanyl,
yep.
or it's mostly fentanyl,
yep.
I mean, they'll keep coming back for more until they die.
Sure.
Because it's so highly addictive.
That's so sad to know.
It is really sad, yeah.
That people are making a business out of
this. I know, out of human suffering and
yes.
death. Yeah.
Yes.
And it is all about money and greed. I mean, the whole thing is.
And so I wanted to kind of peel back the curtain, if you would, a little bit. I can't imagine how you talk about this, but I know that you've gotten reps under your belt to be able to be a strong mom and to talk about it. Just to talk about Emily's story a little bit. And kind of when you first found out that maybe she was using drugs and then what led to ultimately her death.
So I would say the trouble with Emily started when she was still in high school.
Okay.
And Emily was really rebellious and all of a sudden acting out in very rebellious ways that she never had before. I mean, she's a really gifted kid academically, artistically. She was beautiful. She had so much going for her and she had all the advantages, you know,
yeah.
growing up in a middle-class Midwestern family.
Yeah.
You know, she got to do so many things. She was an athlete too.
Yeah.
And so I think as parents, we think, oh, we can really inoculate our children from this. We can protect them by getting them really involved in activities,
yeah.
right? And nobody was more involved in activities than Emily. She met a boy in high school and he was a drug dealer. And it just sort of went down from there. She began using with marijuana. And I really fought that for a long time. I fought the rebellion. I tried to rein her in. I tried all the things they tell you to do, the tough love, you know, the strict parenting type of thing. And nothing really worked. And I was never able to really dissuade her from that path. My tactics did change, though, as she got older. So I really approached her from a standpoint of love. And we just knew something was terribly wrong. I mean, we had been dealing with a lot of stuff for a lot of years since about the age of 15. But before, in her, when she turned 20, her appearance really started to change. She started missing family events. There were a lot of things that started really changing drastically. And so we knew something was wrong. And when we would confront her about it, she would deny. The hardest thing about having someone with addiction in your family is the denial.
Sure.
Because denial is part of the disease. Yeah. And they just want to protect their use at all costs because they feel like they will die if they don't use.
Yeah.
And so we were planning this intervention wondering, like, what is she doing? It has to be more than marijuana and pills. Mm-hmm. We knew about Xanax and her past. And we didn't know she was using heroin, but that's what it was.
Yeah.
And actually the heroin that she used on the date of her death was laced with fentanyl, enough fentanyl to kill six people.
Wow. So. Wow. And so you said 15 is when her appearance and things
well, her
really
behavior started to
change.
Right.
And she passed away when she was how old?
21.
So, and you said like how old when you kind of first started finding out about this? Was it when she was around 15?
Well, when she was in high school, we knew about the marijuana use and we're trying to stop that because it's just not good. I don't care what your views are on the legalization of marijuana or the use of marijuana for adults. It's not for the developing brain.
Right.
And no teenager should be using it.
Yeah.
It sets kids up about 15 times more likely for addiction. Mm-hmm. And if you're already predisposed, if you have the genetics, I mean, you can be in really big trouble and the environment, you know.
Yeah. Growing up, my dad was actually very addicted to drugs. And I didn't know it at the time when I was young. I found out when I was around 11 that my dad was very addicted to drugs. We had to have him go to treatment. And it was a very, I guess you'd probably say, tragic time in my life learning about this. And I'm an only child. And so speaking to your point about the developing brain, my dad had been using drugs for many, many years. And kind of what they have found out with my dad, with how the drugs that he used from his life, is that really his brain stopped fully developing, honestly, around the age of 19.
If that's when he started using, maturity-wise and all that, that's true. Yeah.
So his brain really started stopped developing around that age. And so we've dealt with a lot of different issues from that, and my dad has. And praise God, he's been clean and not used drugs. And I guess, like you say, and like he says, is a recovering drug addict, is a recovering alcoholic, because to that sentiment, you're never fully recovered.
Well, I think you're at risk of relapse, right?
Always.
You're always at risk.
Yeah.
And so your dad is healthy now, which is wonderful, but also it's genetic, right? So, I mean, you could be predisposed to it if you were in the right environment.
And I think one thing that I've learned through this, I don't know this to be true with drugs, because thank goodness I've never tried them and haven't had the chance to get addicted to them. But what I have found is I do have a very addictive personality.
Well, sure, you're addicted to working out, right?
I am.
Which is a good. That's a. We're all addicted to something, right? We're addicted to our phones. I mean, I'm probably addicted to exercise. I don't feel good if I don't work out, right?
Yeah.
So that's a good. That's a healthy addiction.
Yes. Yeah.
Much better than some things that you
absolutely
could do.
And and like you said, like, since we are all addicted to something, you have to find that outlet to do that. And I know one thing that you have mentioned is that through finding out about Emily using and dealing with all the different things that came with that, you have turned to exercise from obviously a physical standpoint, but also a mental standpoint. And you've only been at FitBody for like a year or so now.
Right.
So what has been your kind of journey with fitness to help with the mindset?
Yeah. 250 classes.
That's right. That's right. You did. And you did it by your birthday.
Yeah. That was important to me. No, I always kind of set goals for myself, but fitness is such a big part of my life. So I have been working out since I was 13.
Yeah.
So for a lot of years. And I've always been a regular exerciser too, mm-hmm. because probably when I was younger, I did it more for body image. I mean, girls always wanted to be skinny.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wanted to be skinny. I've never really been skinny. I've been more fit. But, I find as I get older, I really do it for my mental health more than anything. And I want to be able to do all the things that I love to do, like hike and ski. And
yeah.
I'm a real outdoors person and yeah. kayak. And I love to be outdoors and do stuff. And fitness enables me to do that. But I will also say, you know, when, after Emily died, I immediately lost a lot of weight because I couldn't eat.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like working out, you know, the first few months. I probably didn't go to the gym. But when I started going back to the gym, I found a big relief in exercise of my emotions, my grief.
Yeah.
That you store emotions in your body.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely store a lot of grief in a lot yeah. of places. And exercise really helped me with that.
Yeah.
So I think for me now, exercise is much more about a mental health yeah. thing than it is about appearance.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does. It releases that feel good hormone, the endorphins in you that,
right.
that does allow you to let go of maybe some of that stress that you're carrying around with you mm-hmm. from a day to day. You did mention that you have three other children.
Yeah.
From ages, I want to say, and I'll probably get it wrong.
Early 20s.
Early 20s. Emily was the oldest.
She was.
I got the chance to meet your boy, Adam, right?
Yeah.
He came and worked out. And you said he's like in Italy now.
Yeah.
Studying abroad.
And he's a big workout buff too.
Yeah.
He likes to lift weights. Yeah. So.
Well, I'm sure for them too, losing a sibling, working out.
Yeah, losing a sibling is really, really tough.
I can't imagine.
Especially when they were all in high school when yeah. this happened. And it was, you know, it's such a stigmatized thing. I mean, I think they got a lot of support from the community.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness. I don't think they've ever had anybody say anything mean or stigmatizing to them,
yeah.
but it's still been really tough. But I think yeah. the charity has helped everybody in their own way.
Yeah.
So for example, my sons volunteer at all the charity stuff and
okay.
my son, Adam writes papers about it and, you know, has helped yeah. other nonprofits because he's so excited about the nonprofit world. And my daughter, Abby, is an animator illustrator. And so our curriculum, you know, you mentioned you have three little kids.
Yes.
How old are they?
We've got 13, 11, and 7.
Okay. So not yeah. that little.
No, no.
You're on the cusp of all the teenage stuff.
I know.
We feel like prevention is so important. When Emily was young, I did a special for Kello on the okay. meth epidemic.
Oh, wow.
And I made her watch it. And she was always anti-meth. She learned so much from that special that we did, just presenting, you know, yeah. this is what is happening in our community with meth, and this is what is happening with people. But she didn't get the whole message.
Yeah.
So I really had this idea, and I had so many professionals come alongside me to help develop the Emily's Hope Substance Use Prevention Curriculum, K-5.
Oh,
so
wow.
we're now in 4 states before 6,000 students. We wanted, and we're developing the 6-12, but the K-5 is out there, and it's part of our mission for free for any school. And Emily's sister, Abby, helps illustrate the books, and she's helped with the animation series because that's in her wheelhouse.
Schools will purchase these books?
The books, we actually provide one book per section, so we give them the books too.
Okay.
They get the curriculum, and they can incorporate that in their lessons, and there are eight lessons in third, fourth, and fifth grade, and
okay.
a few fewer lessons in kindergarten second.
Does this help the school teacher or the school system know how to incorporate this into their teachings?
Right. They're able to just take the curriculum and teach it, you know, the lessons. And the kids learn about how substances affect their brains and their bodies and how to yeah. protect their brains and their bodies. So it's a very different approach than like you may be familiar with DARE.
Sure.
It's a very different approach than that. It's really just teaching kids the basics about what's happening out there and what substances do to your brain.
Yeah.
And we teach them that, you know, fentanyl, and you can't take anything from someone, anybody. We've heard of kindergartners taking gummy bears,
wow.
in a lunchroom and having to be treated for fentanyl. They didn't die, wow. thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, but it happens.
Yeah.
So we're trying to teach kids, don't take anything from anybody who's a trusted adult, the yeah. difference between medicine versus candy, all of these things.
And so are these like actual physical books that yeah. you guys have created and developed?
Right. Books and animation series and lessons.
Are those in any of the schools in like Sioux Falls area at all?
They are actually in some schools surrounding Sioux Falls. Okay. And we're actually going into the after school program in Sioux Falls right now.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
That is very cool. And right now, so the K-5, you said it's done. And you guys are working on developing 6-12.
Yeah, companion 6-12. We wanted to start with the elementary yeah. school because there are really only a couple of curriculums out there in the nation that are even anything like this that yeah. are teaching kids at a young age.
Well, so. And I think too that, I mean, yes, that, but also, I mean, you seen firsthand the help that it helped with Emily with when you did the reporting on meth. Mm-hmm. And so, and
I mean, that's anecdotal, and we're studying this curriculum, you know, to prove that it works.
Yeah.
So we're in the process of our second year of doing that, studying the curriculum.
Yeah.
But we just feel like with what's going on out there and with mm-hmm. kids having access, you know, to buying pills off of things like Snapchat and kids get phones at younger and younger ages.
They do.
I mean, and kids are so comfortable mm-hmm. taking pills. We're in a pill society, right? Yeah. So we just got to teach them that you can't take anything that doesn't come from your trusted adult.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's so wild. You say that where the kids are getting phones at so young. My youngest is 7 and he loves watching the little YouTube shorts or whatever. And now every TV that you own is a smart TV and you've got access to the YouTubes or whatever. And the other day I had to have a long conversation with him because he was just innocently watching a YouTube short channel or whatever these things are. But it goes from like watching innocent video game, whatever, to next thing you know, like inappropriate X, Y, or Z.
I know. It's, I mean, they're exposed to so much, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, kids are. And that's why we feel like you have to get kids younger while their teachers and their parents have more influence on them than their peers and social media or their phones.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that's very cool. So if a school, like, so do schools reach out to you guys or do you reach out to schools?
Both. I mean, both. So we're in 4 states right now. Yeah. So we're in Minnesota and several surrounding states and some on the coast too now are inquiring about us. So
that's very cool. Yeah. And so what are some of the programs that Emily's Hope offers?
So we have our education curriculum. That's a really big part of it.
Yep.
And then we also offer treatment scholarships through the Avera Addiction Care Center.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
We've helped about 250 people go through treatment. We helped just recently a couple of women who got fired from their jobs while in treatment. We were able to pay their COBRA and keep them in treatment. So the stigma is definitely alive and well. We have a support group for people who've lost someone to a loved one or overdose. And we also, I write a blog. We have a headline service. We have a podcast, Grieving Out Loud, which deals with the topic of grief. It deals with overdose and fentanyl poisoning and also addiction.
Yeah.
So we're in our 6th season now.
Yeah. And that's Grieving Out Loud?
Grieving Out Loud.
On all platforms?
All platforms.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, we've been doing it for a while, and unfortunately, the audience keeps growing because it's such a huge problem.
You said 6 seasons?
So we're in our 6th season right now.
Yeah, very cool.
And then we're just starting up a new post-overdose response team. So that's brand new. It's not even up and running yet.
Okay.
But we are working with the state of South Dakota on that. So we would respond in Minnehaha and Lincoln counties to every overdose.
Okay.
That of a person who survives.
Yeah.
To try to get them help.
Yeah. Okay. So the one thing that stood out to me, obviously, as I shared just a few minutes ago, that I had a cousin who lost his wife to an overdose. And I know the grieving that he went through. You know, there's all sorts of different grieving that you may go through with this. But what is the support group that you guys offer look like? Is it like they meet weekly? Do they meet over Zoom? Do they meet in person? What does that look like?
So we meet in person because we feel that's so much more effective for support than on Zoom. Although we've been asked to expand to do Zoom too. So we'll see maybe in the future. But right now we offer it to anyone who's lost a loved one to overdose or fentanyl poisoning. We're mostly moms. Sometimes we've had a fiance or a sister come along with too. We don't have a lot of guys join our group that maybe
We're kind of stubborn.
Yeah, I know. Talk about your feelings and stuff. Yeah. But I think most of the women are, there's a couple of us who are about 5 to 6 years out. I think we're of great hope and support to the many of these moms. We have about 15, 16 in our group.
Yeah.
And many have lost people like within the last year or last 2 years. And so that grief is so fresh and raw. Mm-hmm. But I think we can just help each other. And so we meet once a month.
How long after losing Emily were you able to find yourself talking about it more and talking and being able to work through your feelings more?
Well, at first, I didn't know if I'd ever be able to do anything again. I mean, obviously, the rug is pulled out from under you when you lose a child. And I didn't even know if I'd be able to go back to my job. And I felt ruined, really.
Yep.
But within a few months, I took 3 months off of work. And within a few months, I just decided I had to speak out about it, had to speak up about it. And I don't know what was compelling me to do it, but I just knew I had to do it. And I had a platform because I worked in television. So I had a platform where, you know, if I would tell her story, people would get it.
Yeah.
And so I started using that platform and the charity just kind of grew out of that.
Yeah. So Emily's Hope, what does that mean to you? So Emily's Hope, you decided to make this charity. Like what is the hope version of it?
So obviously when you lose a child, you kind of, you lose hope, yeah. right? So it's, yeah. It's a big, huge loss. And, but I named Emily after Emily Dickinson, and there's a poem okay. called Hope is a Thing with Feathers. And I kept thinking, I just want to give other people hope, yeah. you know, that they don't have to go through this. I don't want anyone else to experience this pain.
Yeah.
And that was really what drove me. It continues to drive me to this day.
Yeah. That's very cool. How crazy that that poem was kind of always in your mind.
And... in fact, she made me a feather, you know, a pottery feather with that poem on the back for Mother's Day one year. Wow. And, you know, she knew it. It was her favorite poem too.
So. Yeah. And I don't think we touched on this yet, but Emily was an artist.
She was, yeah.
You know, and I seen that you guys, and it was in January, right, that you have your, is it every January that you guys have your benefit?
We usually have it in the last weekend in January.
Okay.
It's the Emily's Hope Art Show and Auction.
Okay.
And so we display Emily's artwork. She left me with 29 paintings and yeah. several pieces of pottery and other painted objects. And she did drawings and paintings. And so we display her artwork, and then we auction off the work of other local regional, national artists.
Yeah.
So we've had a pretty good following.
Yeah.
A lot of support from the community, which means so much.
Yeah. Yeah. I've unfortunately this year I was not able to attend. I have it on the radar to attend next year because I've seen some of you guys like recap videos. So I think I've seen 2022's recap video, and it does just look like an amazing event. I think it looks like you guys like serve a dinner and have a whole
Yeah, we have a dinner and a silent auction and a live auction. We have music and
It looks like it's probably, and then some different people come up and talk about their stories.
We had a mother this year who talked about her son went to a destination. He was 34 years old. Went to a destination wedding in Nashville and somehow wound up with fentanyl in his system. He's not a regular user. They don't know if it was put in his alcohol. The only other thing in his system was alcohol. He and another friend just dropped. Dead on the road, you know, in Nashville. So she spoke, she's from this area. And then we had some people who've been through recovery are into recovery now because of Emily's Hope.
Yeah.
And we've had other people speak. So it's been very compelling.
And I think I've seen in the video recap from the prior year or previous year, like a hallway that you walk down and it has all these pictures of all the different people that you guys are remembering and supporting and doing this in honor of them so that others don't have to hopefully lose their life.
And we don't want them to be forgotten.
Yeah.
And stigmatized. You know, they were people. They were somebody's sons and daughters and husbands and wives and aunts and uncles. And people need to realize that.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of diminishing of human beings, you know, when they suffer from substance use disorder.
Yeah. They almost, others would look at them and judge them, you know, for using substances and, you know, it can affect anybody.
It can.
There's, you know,
well, it's affected your family. It's affected, and it affects a lot of people. A lot of people do keep it hidden.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the stigma that exists to this day.
Yeah. Well, because they're also, too, they're maybe afraid of getting judged. You know, if someone finds out that they're addicted, because people can look at that and think, stop. Like, just stop. Right.
It's just not that easy.
It's not.
Because the brain does become hijacked by the substance.
Absolutely.
And whether it's alcohol or drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that that is just incredible. And so at FitBody, what we do is one of our core values is build community. And we've decided that there's really no better way to build community than to find nonprofits and charity organizations in our community to be able to partner with. And so at FitBody, we, you know, we've partnered with Emily's Hope for quarter one. So January, February, and March, we've partnered with you guys. And I believe our next partner you said that you also work with, which is Cult of Freedom.
Yeah, we've helped victims of human trafficking go through treatment.
Yeah, because you had said that a lot of the victims of human trafficking, they're...
controlled through substances, yes.
Yeah.
100%.
And so there's also trauma with substance that they come out of as well.
Right.
So for quarter one, all of our charity work works with you. And so
we appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what we're doing though, and so for anyone that's watching or listening, we'll share a couple things with you guys. But the first one is in the description of this episode, you're going to be able to find a link where you can claim a free week. And when they come in and claim a free week, every person that comes through the door, if they just try one session out, we'll donate $10 to Emily's Hope just to raise awareness for obviously Emily's Hope. But then also spread the awareness of how much fitness can change your life. And then the second way is we're going to drop a link to your guys' website. What is the best way to find out more about Emily's Hope?
Yeah, we have a lot of information on our website. We actually have three websites. So we have emilyshope.charity. We have emilyshopeedu.org, which is our education website.
Okay.
And then we have morethanjustanumber.org, which is our memorial website for people who've lost their lives in this way. But emilyshope.charity has links to all of it and has all of our programs, everything that we're doing.
Okay. emilyshope.charity. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll put all three of those links in the description just so people can easily find them. I was talking with Carly, who is one of our coaches, and I know that you've had
the pleasure
of getting to know Carly. And she was telling me about your guys' billboard that you have in town that has a whole bunch of faces on there remembering those that have passed. And then I just passed it, and it's on 41st Street, right?
Right.
By Shields. Is that correct?
Right by the Grange, yeah.
Oh,
Grange.
Yeah, 41st and Grange.
Yeah.
Yep, so a little bit closer to us down 41st. But I just think that the work that you are doing, and kind of as I mentioned before, how when tragedy strikes, there's multiple options. But one of the options is to take that tragedy and turn it into something that can really triumph in your life and in other people's lives. And I just want to give you praise for doing that. I know that's not why you do it, but I think it's amazing to use that to help others.
Thank you. I've heard an analogy once, and I often use this when I speak to groups. I say there's two kinds of people in the world, bouncers and splatterers.
Bouncers and splatterers.
And so we all get pushed down into the pit of despair, and everyone's pit may look a little bit different, right?
Yeah.
Your loss or your whatever you're dealing with may be different than what I'm dealing with.
Yes.
But you have a choice whether you are going to splatter on the bottom of that pit or whether you're going to bounce back up out of that pit of despair.
Yeah.
And I think you do have a choice in your response.
Yeah.
And that's all you really have a choice about. You can't control things that happen in your life, you know, necessarily.
Yep.
But you can control your response.
Yeah, you can control your respond to it. I think that that's a great analogy to look at. What else would you like to share, I guess, with those that may be struggling with grief, with just maybe even mental struggles through loss? What kind of like tips could you share with someone that might be struggling with grief or mental loss?
Well, our society doesn't have a lot of tolerance for grief, right? We give 3 days bereavement and then you're supposed to be over it. And obviously when you lose a child or a spouse or somebody very close to you, you're not going to get over it. You're never going to get over it.
Yeah.
The most you can hope for is to, you know, move forward.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to move on. You're going to move forward in your life. And hopefully you can come to a point where you accept the loss and you can still incorporate that person into your life. I mean, Emily's incorporated into my life. She lives on through her art. That's one of the reasons why using her art in the charity is so important.
Yeah.
But I would say seek out the help of qualified professionals, so important to get counseling for grief. And try to surround yourself with maybe people who are understanding rather than people who don't have understanding of it. There are people out there who've never experienced anything like this.
Yeah.
And they just simply don't know.
Yeah.
And they don't always mean to be insensitive, but they certainly can be.
Yeah.
So we do our podcast. That's one of the reasons we do our podcast is so people know they're not alone and they can feel the camaraderie and know some of the things. And I write a blog too. I've written a blog. I've kind of documented everything I've been through since right after Emily's death.
Yeah.
And I think that helps people to know
they're not alone. Is that on your website?
Yeah, it's on our website.
Yeah. Is there any type of like signs that a person, like obviously with a lot of people dealing with their high school and teenagers and school is getting more and more difficult for kids. Is there any signs that a parent can look for to know that maybe their kid is getting into some type of behavior that needs to be addressed?
Well, certainly a change in behavior, a change in grades, a change in friends. You know, whenever there's some drastic changes going on, something else is happening there. It may not be substances. It may be mental health. I mean, there are a number of things it could be.
Yeah.
But you definitely want to investigate that as a parent and not ignore it.
Yeah. And I think just communicating with your kids and being able, I think communication is one of the biggest things that as we continue to live through these social media eras, communication.
It's hard on kids though.
Yes, it is. And it's communication's getting lost. How to communicate with your kid. I remember when I was growing up, mom would pick me up from school and we'd have conversations together about how the day was.
Yeah, you weren't on a phone.
No, right? No. But now you have to like pull your children away from the phone and try to engage in conversation. And so it's getting lost. So yes, when there's a big change, make sure that you're addressing that with your kids. But I just think this has been amazing to look at, to really dive into what Emily's Hope does. You said the your guys' organization started in 2019. What's next for Emily's Hope?
Well, we keep growing.
Yes.
So
yes.
We'll see how much more we grow. We do know we have to finish our 6 through 12 education yes. curriculum. We have a panel working on that right okay. now of educators and healthcare professionals. And so we'll be putting that out there in the next year.
Yeah.
We're really excited for that. We're getting our post-overdose response team up and running. And we have some other things in the works that we're working on. So we have to secure funding for. But
yeah.
we're going to continue to fight this battle as long as this many people are dying every year.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we're not going to stop.
So. Yeah. I think one of the things that you had mentioned to me just not too long ago, and I think is newer for Emily's Hope, was the boxes.
Like, oh, right. I failed to mention that. Right.
Yeah.
So we did receive a grant through the Sioux Falls Area Community Foundation to purchase some Narcan, and we bought some old newspaper dispenser boxes that okay. have been refurbished.
Yeah.
And so there's a QR code on them, and we're looking right now to place those. We have a couple of them we want to place in the city. We're also looking at placing Narcan near defibrillators throughout the city.
Oh, very
just
cool.
maybe one carton of Narcan
yeah.
Near a defibrillator so that it's easily accessible for people in emergencies.
How does Narcan work for those that don't understand?
And we also pass out fentanyl testing strips as well.
Oh, okay.
So that was something else we worked with Link on.
Okay.
So Narcan is a medication, a nasal spray that you give to someone who has suffered from an opioid overdose. It only works if you have had an opioid overdose. So you can give Narcan to somebody if they're passed out and if they are not having an opioid overdose, it doesn't matter. It doesn't
hurt
them,
yeah.
doesn't affect them. But if they're having an opioid overdose, it brings people back to life.
Okay.
So it's very necessary that it be done immediately. And with some of these more powerful analogs I was telling you about that
yeah.
are out there, I mean, it has to be done almost exactly immediately.
Yeah.
Or it's too late. So
yeah.
it's so important if you can get Narcan or get it from us. We have it for limited, it's expensive. So we used all of our grant money to order as many as we could, and we're looking to replenish
yeah.
those funds to be able to order more. But if you can carry it with you, if you can have it in a purse or, you know, have it handy,
yeah.
You never know. People have overdosed in public restrooms. People have overdosed lots of places. So
yeah.
it in traffic. I mean,
yeah.
it's just a good practice to have it on hand.
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think that the work you're doing, I think that charity work is amazing because there's so many people that are being helped by the work that you're doing. And like you said, it is sometimes hard to know exactly who's being helped. But the fact of the matter is that you're doing the best you can to take what you've been through and help as many as you can along the way. You guys, we're going to post the different links. I'll make sure that we, Angela and I, touch base afterwards here and just get all those links down so that we can share them with you. But if you are dealing with grief, with any type of mental battles, with anything, just know that there's people out there that care. There's people out there that can talk to you.
And we have a number of resources on our website, too, for you or for a loved one. If you have a loved one who's struggling with addiction or you're struggling. And, of course, you can always dial 988 for
yes.
immediate assistance. Now, that's not an emergency assistance, but for immediate assistance
yeah.
to get help, whether it's a mental health or addiction issue.
Yeah.
But we really appreciate Fit Body's, you know, support.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
yeah. It's been I don't know how to say like, right? It sounds weird to say it's been fun, but I mean, it has been fun, right? Like to be able to.
I think partners are so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Because you never know what person or what community is, what the people they're touching, right? And so until I got to know you, I've never heard of Emily's Hope. You know, my cousin had passed away years ago and I didn't know that you in your organization existed. And so sometimes it's just having the knowledge. So whether this episode directly helps somebody or indirectly helps them just by now more people have the knowledge of what's available to them, I think is going to be huge. So we will post those links down below, you guys. Thank you for taking the time out of your day. We know that time is one of the most precious things. And Angela, for you taking the time out of your busy day to come and chat with me, it's been awesome. And we're going to continue our work together. And so really, this episode is being released like the beginning of March, I believe. And so there's about 3 weeks yet, you guys. If you're watching this and you want to try out FitBody, you've got 3 weeks to come in, use that link, and every single person will donate $10 over to Emily's Hope. And then we'll also put the links and resources all to, I believe you said, emilyshope.charity.
That's right.
We'll put that down below as well. But thank you guys for joining us. And make sure that you like, subscribe, and share this episode. And we will see you guys all next Thursday. Bye, you guys.